This episode is going over 11 models of the life's task of great masters throughout history. If you don't know anything about the life's task, I suggest you start with reading Mastery by Robert Greene. But if you have read it and you're like me and you still wanted to know, well, what are people's life's tasks? What do those look like? What are some examples that I could model or that could inform my own reflection on what is my life's task? What can I be a master of? Then this episode is for you. I'm just going to go through these. It's going to be very different than the usual episodes I do where I'm interviewing experts, but I hope that it's useful. I know that in my own conversations, talking to particularly young men who have questions about career and things, that this list of examples has been really helpful to a lot of people. And now I just want to share it with the whole world through this YouTube channel and podcast. So the first example would be Leonardo da Vinci's life's task. And my understanding of that, after reading Mastery and the chapters about Da Vinci, as well as reading Walter Isaacson's biography of Leonardo da Vinci, we'll get to Steve Jobs later, is that Da Vinci's life's task was to discover the essence of life itself and to express it through art. And if you look at Da Vinci's work, I've seen some of his sketches when they've been in museums on display in Los Angeles. It's been incredible. You know, the way that he was going through so much detail to understand how a flower grows and how similar that is to the way that a baby is formed in the womb, and when he was doing things like opening cadavers to better understand people's musculature and bone structure and the way that that all is expressed in their faces and things, and then he was able to better express that in his paintings of people. That's the through line of Da Vinci's work. That was what he was doing. He was getting at life itself, and the painting and the art and the design was the medium that he used through which to express his understanding of life itself, and he never let off that pursuit. So that's Da Vinci's life's task, number one. Number two, let's do Steve Jobs. This was not in Mastery by Robert Greene. This was more informed by my interview with Robert Greene in our discussion, as well as reading Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs. But I would say that Steve Jobs' life's task was combining technology and design with a singular focus on creating the best and most original designs. And if you look at Apple, if you look at Next, if you look at Pixar, and if you look at Steve Jobs' return to Apple, that's the through line. That's what he was trying to do in all of those organizations. That was the thing that gave him joy. And the money and building the most valuable company in the world, that all came as a side effect of his incredible pursuit of this thing that he was uniquely called to do. That's the whole idea with a vocation or a life's task. It's just the incredible pursuit of this thing that only you can do, because nobody has your life experience. Nobody has your fingerprints and your genetic makeup and all of that. So you can do something that no one else can do quite like you will. And if you run with that to your absolute limits, odds are all the other stuff will fall into place with money and success and all of that. The next one, number three, is Buckminster Fuller, who had pursuits of money and success and those sort of things, but they all flopped for him. And it was only when he had a moment of realization that he got out of that. And this is a quote, he's quoted in Mastery, that his life's task was something along the lines of, quote, to apply yourself to converting your experiences to the highest advantage of others, end quote. And I would add, to create alternative ways of making things that would open people's eyes to new possibilities and the pursuit of his peculiar ideas. And if you've ever seen a geodesic dome, which is one of Buckminster Fuller's inventions, you will see what I mean about these particularly peculiar ideas that he had, but that came to life and were shared with other people and have benefited many people. So that's Buckminster Fuller. Number four, we'll do Freddie Roach, maybe the greatest boxing coach of all time, coach of athletes like Manny Pacquiao. He's really in a class of his own as far as boxing coaches go. And for Freddie Roach, it was first being a boxer that seemed his life task, but he then evolved into coaching because he realized that he had a love not of boxing per se, but of competitive sports and strategizing. So his life task was to use those inclinations on the foundation of his existing skills that he already had in boxing and that experience, but then adapt within the sport of boxing to find a new way to apply that attitude toward competitive sport and strategizing. And in that, to also always keep his eye on the future and not on the past. He was developing new styles, new methods. He was taking tools of other coaches, but then evolving them, taking his own strategies, but then evolving them to get to the point where people who box with Freddie Roach as their coach have a tremendous advantage because of all the things that he brings to the table. Next, we'll do John Coltrane, famous jazz musician. If you've never listened to John Coltrane, I suggest you start with his rendition of My Favorite Things. That's a tune from a musical. It's The Sound of Music, the musical with Julie Andrews. But he does his own spin on it with all kinds of different instrumentation and different sounds that just all work together in a magical sort of way that certainly no one else could have ever come up with. So I highly recommend you listen to that and let that be sort of your soundtrack to meditating on what your own life's task might be if you're looking for something that is uniquely yours. And so for Coltrane, I would say his life's task is not something like saving the world. You know, it's actually very personal to him, but it was to follow in Charlie Parker's footsteps. Charlie Parker was a musician before Coltrane, and then to emote as best he could through music. That was the idea, was just to follow in someone else's footsteps and then to emote through the music, through his instrument. But in doing that thing that might seem very individual, he was able to make music that has touched the lives of so many. So that's a thing about these life's tasks. It's unique to you, but often it has a benefit to the whole world. And if you think about it from like a survival perspective, we need people who can occupy different niches, people who can have different skills that they bring to the table. And so we're all made with unique inclinations. And if we run with those the best that we can, then we make something extremely special that we can bring back to the table for everyone else. So you could really think of finding your life's task as something that might seem individual, but in fact is really your way of contributing to the richness of all of humanity by doing your thing that you are uniquely inclined to do. So I encourage people, even if it sounds selfish maybe, to run with your life's task, to recognize that you are actually, by doing something that only you can do better than anyone else, you are bringing the most value into the world that you possibly can. So enjoy it. It's not selfish. It's great. It's glorious to pursue your life's task. Another musician would be Mozart. For Mozart, he had also a moment of realization. He had to recognize that he didn't necessarily love music or piano exactly, but what he really loved was composing, and especially for the theater. So his life's task was first to escape the tyranny of his father, because his father kind of controlled his whole life as a kid, and then to compose at a furious pace, and to be honest with himself that he was a composer, and to not bury the talent that God had endowed him with. Those are words that I'm taking from things that I've read about Mozart, but that is my understanding of his life's task, to be honest with himself that he was a composer, and to not bury the talent that God had endowed him with. Next would be Henry Ford, a great entrepreneur, of course, and he was interested in this idea of the horseless carriage, which we now know as the motor vehicle. And when he saw this horseless carriage, he knew that his life's task was to be a pioneer in developing a horseless carriage. And he did that. He brought it to the masses, and it was multiple failures, too. He had multiple business failures. He tried it once. It didn't work. He tried another business. It didn't work. But each time that he was making those businesses, he was studying what worked about businesses very much like a mechanic would study what works about a mechanical object. He looked at those components, tried to break it down, and then was doing basically, you know, a series of diagnostic tests on his business models until he could find the business model that was going to be effective, that was going to bring this horseless carriage out to the rest of the world. That's Henry Ford. Next would be Champollion. Champollion's life's task was relatively, specific and might seem like it's not an exciting thing for the masses, but his was to translate the Rosetta Stone. And other people had tried in more technical ways rather than, in Champollion's case, to go with the things that seemed meaningful to him about the process. And again, to go back to his inclinations rather than to work through a checklist. He was instead getting at different aspects of language and then seeing that what was encoded in the Rosetta Stone was not necessarily any one normal model of language that we might find, but it was a mix. There were characters like we might understand, but there were also pictograms and things that you wouldn't get to rationally working down an algorithm. It took something much more to get to Champollion's level of understanding and to translate the Rosetta Stone. Next would be Michael Faraday. Michael Faraday's life's task could be described as to unravel nature's secrets and the mysteries of creation itself through experimentation. And in his case, these mysteries were involving electricity, but he was working in experiments first. He was, as a kid, he was going and watching other people give these demonstrations and experiments, and he was taking notes and trying to better understand how their experiments worked and what he could glean from them. And then by taking really great notes, he was able to teach himself to write small books, basically, about what was going on there. And then those books and his note-taking process got noticed, and then he was able to apprentice under a great experimenter, and then he was able to absorb that great experimenter's thought process and then be able to make his own experiments to prove the things that were interesting to Michael Faraday. So that was his journey in this attempt to unravel nature's secrets. Next would be Charles Darwin. And for Darwin, he came on the theory of evolution at a fairly young age, the Voyage of the Beagle. He was a young man. And so his life's task, really after coming up with that theory of evolution, was to elaborate on that theory for the rest of his life and to prove his theory. Because if he just put it out there as a young man, people would have just ignored him. Instead, he had to do lots of experimentation and write books and do things to prove it and get behind his work and get other people behind his work and also get other people to oppose his work and dialogue with him. He had to be someone who had the authority to express this wild theory in order to get the theory into the public domain and to get it to be eventually widely accepted. And in the last chapter of Mastery, Robert talks about Marcel Proust, the writer, and for Proust, he says that the life's task was to discover hidden patterns of human behavior and to bring that to life in his writing. So his story was kind of meandering. If you look at his life's task, it seemed that he didn't quite know where he was going, and he seemed a bit of a dilettante or kind of a society man. But as time went on, he realized that because he had been so diligent about trying to understand people and what mattered to them, and he had been writing, even though his writing hadn't always been a hit, that by the end of his life, what he had was this incredibly deep understanding of human nature that he could see in other people. And then he also had developed the hard writing skills that he could use those hard writing skills to express what he understood about human nature through his characters and to make stories that were much more vivid and interesting than what would have been had he not tried so hard at understanding the people. So his journey, while it seemed meandering, was just right for him to make the thing that he was destined to make. So that's Marcel Proust's story. That's the last of these models of life's task. And if you are someone who's trying to figure out your life's task, I would encourage you to just take a look at these. See if any of them sound interesting to you, not necessarily to imitate, but to imitate in structure. Do I want to discover X and bring it to Y through Z art form? Maybe that's more like you. And without models of these life's tasks, it's going to be really hard to just absorb that voice within you because you have so many things, so many influences in your life that are competing with it. And so I hope that this video, this episode, allows you to better hear that voice in yourself and to have a little bit of a framework that if you do hear that voice, you can see, does it check with this framework that is familiar in someone else's life's task? I hope that's what this does for you. If you want to know more about finding your life's task, I would recommend that you check out some videos. I'll put those in boxes on the screen. I'll put those in links in the description. But one would be about finding your life's task, and that would be from my first interview with Robert Greene. And then the other one would be, should you find your life's task, or as you are finding your life's task, how to really achieve mastery in your life. That will also be a clip from my interview with Robert Greene, back my first one with him. So I'll put those links in the description and up on the screen. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the channel, because I'll be making more videos that will hopefully help you on your journey to mastery.